In this episode, we interview Zane Syed. Zane runs some highly profitable shops in Michigan, with a single shop doing in excess of $3 million. Zane throws down some controversial techniques for how his team is making it happen, and he opens up to us about how he leads from an authentic place and understands the numbers to drive his teams and his strategies for increased performance.
So we're about to have some wisdom bombs dropped from Mr. Zane here.
I was told our store just wasn't going to do over 1.5. Then we did 2 million that year. And then I did 3 million the next year. And then they did 3.5. And then I was like, okay. And then when you ask what's the max, I don't know what the max is anymore. You know, don't ask me those questions. Like, no, like, stop thinking like a technician. Let's think like an owner. How can we get more dollars for these hours? That's not a reputation I'm interested in having. I want to be like,
man, you just poke the bear for a lot of shop owners because they want that. That's that ego. Wow.
You never knew this, Aaron. Sorry.
I did not know this.
Zane's going to drop a mic and walk out. Like, he's just, he's out.
So I was trying not to say this to Aaron.
People are here listening going 5-6 bays, $3 million. There's no way. It's not possible.
We're gonna ruffle some feathers now. So this is controversial stuff.
You know, people right now, their head is hurting. You're making them question everything about their business right now.
Sorry, yes. I told you it'd be controversial. We're doing $10 million and our corporate office was a bag.
Oh my God.
It's a dude in a coffee shop. It's a dude in a coffee
shop.
It's a dude at Starbucks.
Yeah.
I often say pain necessitates change. Are you going to wait until it's painful enough for you to change? Do you know that your shop has another gear, but you just can't find it? ShopFix Academy has the largest community of like-minded business professionals to help you find that next gear. You get coaching, community, and personal development. So here's my challenge to you. Call ShopFix. Try them out. Don't take my word for it. Find out for yourself. I know firsthand what they can do. I've seen the businesses turn around. I've talked to the owners whose lives have changed, whose families are doing better today than they were before. Call 615-645-3683. Take this challenge as an opportunity to find out for yourself. Imagine where you could be after 12, 24, 36 months from now. You can be in a completely better place, or you can wait, let another year go by. Pain necessitates change. Call 615-645-3683 and let them know we sent you. Call ShopFix. I'm amazed how many shops out there are not taking advantage of digital marketing. Using a digital marketing partner is your key to effortlessly increasing car count. And notice I said partner, not vendor. Finding an experienced partner who works with you makes all the difference. A partner gets to know you and what your business needs, not just apply a template and send you a bill and call it a day. Leads Near Me is a partner you need. And yes, they have experience managing over $16 million in ad revenue, specifically in auto repair. But what's even more impressive is how they work with you. If you go to their website, leadsnearme.com, they host a ton of videos and podcast content for you to get to know them personally, or call them at 888-953-2379 and find out how they can partner with you. Again, that's 888-953-2379. Leads Near Me, effortlessly increasing car count. You're listening to the Success Leaves Clues podcast, a podcast for the auto repair industry, where we uncover the journey of real shop owners. We hear their story of what it took to get their breakthrough, because we are here to inspire you to have your own breakthrough, to be the success you've been looking for, and to change your industry, your family, and your life forever. Thank you for joining us, and now on to the episode. Zane, welcome to the show. So glad to have you. Thanks for coming on with us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, first off, your stores are blowing out. You're crushing it over there. Yeah. And so we were talking about it and I asked you, I said, hey, what do you think's the limit of one of your stores? Because you set a limit, it doubled. You set a limit, it tripled. You're talking to your team. You're like, hey guys, like, settle down just a little bit.
And we got to preface this real quick. Zane does more out of one store than most people do out of three. And he has three of these stores. And so I want to make sure, Zane, that you really focus on your concentrated effort before you're willing to go into the next one. Some people get a store to 100 grand and go, oh, time to go open the next one. And for you, you're like, we're just getting out of bed. You know, we're just getting going. And so I think that's a, as we go through this podcast, I would really like to focus in on your standards, because you don't go to the next one until a standard's met. So, and I think a lot of people, if they could just tweak that and grasp what you see as the minimum, it would probably change their life. And so I'm excited to hear this wisdom from you and how you've come to some of these conclusions.
Well, I think, first of all, I think that conclusions, you know, are based on our upbringing to a great degree. And I think that, you know, my upbringing was a mom who was very tough on me in terms of grades, you know, and she said, if you don't get an A+, you're pretty much you're not worthy or something like that. So, you know, that's kind of stuck with me. But I think, you know, I'm very blessed to have the teams, Jay, as we were talking yesterday. You know, I was told by someone that our store, our 5-bay store in Troy, the first one wasn't going to do over 1.5. And we're at like 1.3 when this gentleman visited us. And so I was like, oh, okay. So I guess not. And then we did 2 million that year. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I pulled out and they did 3 million next year. And then they did 3.5. And then I was like, okay. And then when you ask, what's the max? I'm like, I don't know what the max is anymore. You know, don't ask me those questions. So as far as minimums, you know, I don't know what most people think when they open stores, but I'm very similar to Aaron. I think we have a similar, like, a gut feeling when it comes to the business. For me, is gotta have to make money. I'm not opening more stores just to say I have more stores. I don't really have any interest in that. I actually don't like when people say, oh, you're doing so well. And that, because I don't think we're doing that great. I think that, you know, we have a job to do and it has to be done well. And my job as the owner is to protect the cash flow of the business. So I grade myself on that metric very heavily. Opening a new store, I mean, if you're opening another store, the math is very simple. If you have a store doing $1 million, you're putting down 200K to the bottom line at 60 or 50% GP even, you have to do another million at a new store to get that same result, or you could do 400K out of the existing store. So how much harder is it to do 400K?
Great point. What, can you walk us through that math of why you feel only 400K out of an existing store will give you that extra 200K?
Well, if it's 50% GP even, which is a very low GP, all that GP is now net profit because you've already beat your overhead. So once you get past that overhead, every dollar in gross profit is net profit. And I think people overlook that when they buy new stores. So the goal is, what's your goal, right? The point is, what are you trying to do? And for me, I was very broke. And I just didn't want to be broke anymore. So I wanted to make money and improve the lives of the people, pay them very well. And you can't pay people six figures if you're only making 100 grand a year. It's very hard. So I wanted to have stores that did 30% net, 28% net. I wanted to have stores that did multi-million dollars so I could afford to keep those players with me. I don't want to lose guys that I got up to 100K and then they go somewhere else to make 150. How do I get these guys making more money year after year? The only way to do that is to have stores that produce high amounts of net and then still more left bottom. Yeah.
And do you feel that stores can only achieve 25 to 30% net if they're at a certain size?
No, I don't think that's true necessarily. I think you could do 30% net out of a 100K store. But, and that's the caveat, is, you know, where does the owner fit into that?
And that's where it gets, if you're doing 30% out of a 100K store, there's a few guys working their butts off.
Yeah.
You're working hard.
You have a job, is what I always say. It's when you have a small store making big rev and big net, the owner has a job, like in the business.
Speak to that. That's big right there. Speak to that for a second.
Well, so I'll speak from my own experience. I want to speak in generalization. So when we're doing $1 million, we're making like 350K out of that shop. But I was there 7 days a week. So now when you're doing $3 million, you might be making 500K or 600K, but you're not there at all. So for me,
I'll take that one.
Yeah.
I'd take that one.
Sign up all day long. I was just going to say, I going back to the point of the two stores, you know, I think it's sometimes a lost point. Expanding the market that you already have is more advantageous than getting a new market. Finding the ability to expand where you're at is really important versus just jumping to the next. And overextending yourself where, or not learning the lessons you need to learn in that one store before you go to the next one too. There's a lot of things to dig into. And also, I think for you, the power of focusing on your team about how you can keep them and grow them is probably how you have such a high performing team today. Can you speak to a little bit about that? What is that passion for you for developing people?
Well, I learned this from a great mentor of mine. You know, I found out from my own experience that I struggled a lot growing up. My dad wasn't around. You know, at the age of 11, we came to this country. I didn't have a father. He was over. It's not like he'd left us. He just had to go back to support us. And I didn't realize how much of that fatherly wisdom that I needed until I met some of the mentors that I did in my life, Aaron being one of them. And did I start getting some horsepower out of me? Mm. Like, it was very clearly obvious how much more of my energy and intellect was now getting used simply because of guidance. And now I'm to the point where I'm thinking guidance has to be one of the most valuable things in life. And I've seen it happen over and over and over, not just in my life, but my friends' lives. So yeah, I think I just overvalue that. But I do put all my chips in that bucket to say, hey, I'm going to invest in these people and it's going to pay off. And it has paid off. And it's kind of a leap of faith. You know, investing in people is something that for me has been life-changing personally. And I've seen it change other people's lives. And it's something that I bet on heavily, even now. I don't always win, but I think I'm further ahead than I'm behind on it. So it's been paid off pretty well.
You know, I one thing you mentioned to me, you have a tenet about being a guiding light to others, helping others. And I'm curious, how do you do that with your teams? What does that how does that show up in day-to-day practice or anything you do with your folks?
It's very difficult. As I get older, I'm feeling like I'm becoming more aware of my insufficiencies and my follies. I thought I was a great leader 5 years ago. I was like, oh yeah, I can do anything. I'm the best leader in the world. As I get older, I realize, holy crap, like there's so much I'm doing wrong that I didn't even know I was doing wrong. So I think that in fact isn't, ironically, it's actually made more people attractive to me rather than less, which is really humbling because the more flawed I realize I am, the more people want to deal with me. And that's really, it's the humility I think that comes out of that is, man, despite my flaws, these people want to keep working with me. And just being transparent about that, you know, I just had a talk actually with my office manager. I said something really dumb at one of our company events. I said something to him about him and I said it in jokingly, but he took it personally and I thought about it and he's like, that really hurt my feelings. And he did that in front of the whole team. And it was very hard for him to say that because he's kind of an introverted person, but. And that hurt because I obviously don't want to hurt him. I love this guy. He's one of the best guys in our company. And not just despite that, just a very gentle soul. So it's doing stuff like that, you know, it really brings me down. But then the one thing I've really struggled with, and now I'm becoming more aware, is just having more self-compassion, to forgive myself. Because I will hold that for about 2 weeks now, normally. And I would be like, beat myself up, even though he forgave me. So I think the self-compassion part has really paid big dividends in the last 6 months for me as well. And I think a lot of leaders are very hard on themselves. And then as a result, they're very, very hard on their team. Mm-hmm. So anyway, sorry to go off on a tangent, but it's hard. I don't know how I do it, but I mean, I have great role models. Of course, I have people that I look up to and I'm like, what would he do in this position? And that's helped a lot too.
Are you, Zane, a motivator type personality, or are you just like, here's the goal, let's go get it, here's the process we're going to do to get there? How would you describe yourself?
I don't know. I mean, I would say a blend of all of these things, right? I would like to ask people if I can help them with their goals. So what is it that you want? Because I don't even know if I can help you. It's like, well, I want to do this. All right, well, I got the math right here. So it's a little bit of both, I would say. I'm very process oriented. I want to show people that we have a goal. It's not a dream. You know, here's the math behind how you can get there. But I'm a big believer in motive. You know, is why are you even here? You know, what's your goal? So I would say both. Yeah,
that's good. So why don't you kind of give us a walkthrough of the current Zane Empire? How many stores you got? What kind of revenue are you doing? And what part of the country are you in?
Yes, sir. We own the Carfix Auto Pro brand right here in Detroit, Metro Detroit. We're in Troy, Michigan. We have 3 stores, 2 of which opened last 2 years. We did 9.6 or 9.65 last year. A little over 3 million a store. We've got 32 people as of right now.
And with that, you opened can you walk us through opening the first store to the second to the third and your decisions to become an MSO and the fears and the things that turned out maybe not to be true that you were worried about to get to that point?
Yeah, that's a fun journey. Well, I worked with my brother. He's the one who actually opened up the first store in 2011. I was there when he opened that store from scratch. I worked in that store till 2020. 21, him and I made a decision to split ways. And that's when we did that 2 million something year in 2020. Going MSO, I joined ShopFix to go MSO back in 2018 and realized very, very, in a very sad way that I wasn't even close to being ready. And I think that was really looking back, I'm very proud of that wisdom or whatever you want to call it, that I stepped down and said, you know what, forget this MSO thing. Let's just make the store better because our foundations are cracked. And I kind of stated, but I always kept that MSO dream in the back of my head. So when 21 came along and my brother and I no longer were affiliated, I looked at this team and I said, the only way I'm going to keep these guys is if I get them more opportunity. So, I mean, it wasn't really like I want to have more stores. You know, I was quite happy with how much money I was making. I mean, my wife and I don't use off that much money, but having that margin of safety allowed us to take risks. So challenges, I think the biggest challenge is generally from going from 1 to 2 stores, leadership and systems. I think that's the biggest thing is I really had to have my ducks in a row with leadership from 1 to 2. And our systems needed to be crystal clear to the whole team. And luckily we did. Number 1 to 2 was a cakewalk. I mean, we got in this store that was doing $500,000 for the last 40 years a year. I think we knocked out 2.1 in the first 12 months. And then we did 2.7 the full year. And then they did 3.3 last year. It's a 6-bay fire stealth. So, and that I really believe the leadership and the systems is what did that. But then from 2 to 3, it's a whole different story. For those of you guys that want to go from 2 to 3, for the love of God, please have a corporate office because you're going to get your butt handed to you like I did. And I was like, dude, I'm making like a little bit more money for like so much more work, you know? That kicked my butt. I'll be honest. 2 to 3 was hard. Especially cause 3 was from scratch.
Well, and I'm going to tell you, I'm similar. Second store was a cakewalk for me. It was the right spot, right time. A hospital, local hospital announced they were moving into an area right next to that store. So the pieces all came together for me. The third store was a harder store, but not only that, as you pointed out, you know, 2 stores you can really handle yourself. Go to one in the morning, the other one in the afternoon, flip-flop it the next day. You're really at both. There's not much that's going to happen. You get 3 stores all of a sudden, you can hit 2 in a day. Yeah, you can hit all 3 in a day, but you can't make impact. To make impact, it's really 2 a day. You got to be there 3-4 hours. And so I quickly realized zone defense was a thing and that I had to pick and choose my battles and how I was going to handle it, et cetera. And my corporate office as well, all of a sudden had to be built from scratch. My bookkeeper quit on me in the middle of it. So that was my crash course in accounting. For you, can you walk us through on the corporate office side, what were some things that you were like, wow, this is kicking my butt? Because you joke and you say that, but can you give us some clear-cut examples where things went wrong and you're like, dude, it was so much easier with just 2 stores?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're similar in this respect. And I'm the disorganized salesperson kind of guy, not the organized manager guy. So I'm all about grow, grow, grow. We'll figure it out. And you can do that, you know, because you're doing a 3 million, 5 million. It's not that bad. But those invoices, they start piling up real quick. And those receipts and those statements from your vendors, now you're going over triple the vendor statements, triple the credit card statements. Theft becomes a real issue now. And now if you lose 3%, now it's a big deal. You can lose 3%. You know, you can kind of be approximately right. But as I was getting bigger, you know, as our team's getting bigger, I'm like, 2%, that's like $900,000. Now, like, you know, whatever, it's like $300,000. So, and yeah, that was a reality that I think a lot of owners don't think about, is when you get economies at scale, you know, a percent is no longer a percent. That's like a whole person's yearly pay, you know? I struggled with that, you know, had the margin of error, I couldn't live off of that anymore.
Well, and I think you mentioned earlier about the foundations, building that foundation, obviously the corporate office, having the foundation there, and the paperwork challenges. Was there something that was alleviated the most during that process when you started to get those things under works? Was it the paperwork, or was there something else?
I think the biggest thing that was me doing menial things that were not being effective anymore. Menial things as in I was doing all the Costco runs when we had two stores. I used to buy all the food. I get a lot of joy out of doing that work, but I was like, dude, why am I, like, when we had three stores, I was at Costco one day and like when we had an issue and I was like, why am I at Costco? Like it just like this light bulb clicked on, right? I had to hire someone. And I think that's, if you don't want to get a DM, for me, promoting one of my FCAs to a corporate guy who was just like my right-hand guy, that was the biggest.
Can you tell everybody what an FCA and a DM is real quick in case they don't know?
Yeah, FCA is a front counter assistant. You know, those are the people in our shops that kind of help out with the front. But you call it some people call it a CSR, some people call it a parts manager, but the roles are fairly similar. They're kind of the front counter assistant that just helps out with all the admin work. So I had a very organized person, complete polar opposite of me, someone who's very disciplined and organized, and also had a great personality. And I promoted that guy to be my corporate assistant, or I called him a corporate manager. So he's a great guy. And yeah, but he's a great guy. And I said, hey, I need you to help me run this company. And he said, sure. Like, what do you need? And I said, I just made a list of things that I didn't want to do anymore. And he said, yeah, man, that's nothing. Like, what else do you need? I'm like, really? That's how, he's like, yeah, man, this is going to be fun. And the next day I woke up, had breakfast with my family. I was like, wow, like I don't have to do any of that. And that was huge. That was huge. And after that, then we finally got a building. Oh, actually, he ran the corporate office out of his backpack for about 6 months. And we're doing $10 million dollars, and our corporate office was a backpack.
Oh my gosh.
Aaron, when you say corporate office, like, you're talking about a backpack.
It was a backpack for
I'm
a
like
while,
teams but. Of people.
Yeah.
You know, just I imagine like back in the 50s, just typewriters, you know, hacking away, you know, like in calculators, tin keys. He's like, it's a backpack.
It's a dude in a coffee shop, Aaron. It's a dude in a coffee
shop.
It's a
dude at
Starbucks.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a smartphone and a MacBook, you know, and that's pretty much it. And a yellow pad, maybe, and a Ziploc full of receipts.
You know, it's sad, but it's true. It was actually like that.
No, but it's cool. You know, it's cool that I love what you just said about, holy crap, I can actually see you standing in Costco with a shopping cart full, staring at the ceiling. Like, I see that in my head. And exactly. I just think that's a cool picture, because we've all been there. We've all been there with the cart going, how did I get here? Because it's a frog in boiling water, right? It's slowly turning up, slowly turning up. And you just keep helping and doing things and doing things. Before you know it, you're like, holy crap, I'm everywhere doing everything. Yeah. I can't do it all. So, What were you buying food for, by the way? Is this for your employees?
Yeah, we have a weekly Costco run for all the shops where the guys just request whatever they want. We've done this for years. And
so you have like free snacks in your kitchen and it's just whatever they want. That's your secret to 3 million a shop.
Aaron, stay put. You can't go over there. Sure. You don't get free snacks.
I'm going to Costco. I'll be back in a minute, guys.
Yeah. Well, you do the donuts, right? Yeah, we tried the donuts. My guys are
they got fat. They got fat. They slowed down. They didn't turn as many hours. Dude, they were happier. They were way happier.
Let's talk about health for a second. Let's talk about health.
Yeah. Their wives weren't as happy when that check got smaller.
No. Yeah. Well, I would just, one thing, I call those time parasites. Things that, I mean, when you're in it, you're running day to day, you're doing things. A lot of times everything hits you at priority level where it all seems like the same priority. Until you reach that moment where you're standing in Costco, you're sitting in the line and stuff's going crazy on your phone. It's blowing up. You're looking at the stack. Like, what am I doing here? All of a sudden you realize the priority of standing in line at Costco just went way low. And you realize, oh, that's a time parasite. That's something that's eaten away. I've never identified it. And you start to stack rank your priorities. What are the really important things that are going to keep you from losing that 3%, 4%? And so identifying that and putting somebody in charge of it is a really powerful thing.
So I got a question. Zane, you're known for being cheap with a lot of your friends, and you're known for running a lean
model.
That,
he's saying that in a really good way. Efficient.
I am, she says efficient. I'm a cheapo at heart, so
yes, you are.
I am attracted to other cheapos. Now, it doesn't mean we don't like nice stuff. It just means we think in our head, if I buy this, can I dump this later and still get my money back? Like, my wife hassles me. She's like, you bought this expensive car. I bought a fancy sewing machine. I go, that sewing machine we can't sell for $500 the day we walk out of the store. I'll make money on this car. And so, no, in all seriousness.
She's not listening.
She'll never listen to this. My wife will never. And Zane's wife will never listen. Yeah. And
make sure she might.
She won't.
None of our wives.
She doesn't even know what I'm doing right now. It's okay.
They don't even care. They don't even want to support us. They don't even care. They're like silly boys. But, you know, on a serious note, you are known for being thrifty. You are known for getting a lot out of a little. And there's some serious thought that goes into that. Let's be real. So what I'd love for you to tell us about is, what is the type of model of your shop? Some shops run a more of a luxury model. They have loaners, fancy shuttles. Some shops, you know, have, you know, Vinny on the front counter who's 300 pounds smoking a cigarette and there's no frills. Where are you between Vinny and luxury? And what was your decision process to choose whatever model you are running?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think so. Speaking in general, we're definitely not a fancy loaner car shop, and we're far from that. We're definitely not Vinny either in terms of like the front counter. As soon as you go in the back though, you might start getting some Vinny vibes though. I mean, our shops are kind of dumps in the back. I'm not even going to lie. It's, they're very small and they're, you know, we're running 500-600 cars a month through these 5-bay shops. So they get trashed. And then we'll clean them and they'll stay clean for like 4 hours and then they're back to normal, right?
Back to work.
I mean, do you run a GS in your shops to clean the shops or do you not
have GS? No, we have GSs and we have, you know, we have people that clean. It's just they get trashed anyway. I mean, I'm not proud of this, but the front, definitely there's no negotiation. The front has to be clean. It has to be updated. There has to be every, you know, the amenities in terms of snacks and all that stuff. Nice furniture, nice lighting. I'm a huge proponent of.
You have snacks up front?
Yeah. Yeah, the front, I don't negotiate with that. I mean, it has to be just as nice as humanly possible. Coffee, yes, sir. Yeah.
You got water?
Water, yes, sir.
You have a bathroom for the company.
Yes, we have a bathroom. Yeah.
I'm just trying to make sure. Yeah. I've heard you're lean. I'm just trying to, just poke a little bit.
No, the immigrant culture is, you know, food is a big part of our thing. And, you know, we do believe in giving as many comforts in terms of that. We have a shuttle van at every vehicle, of every shop. You know, we do all the free shuttles. So the front does look very presentable. We want to make it presentable for, you know, the soccer moms. Our stores are in moderately high income areas, you know, 80K-ish. So we're not trying to run down. So we're trying to get that white collar, family oriented audit clientele that we are after. But yeah, I'm not, so that's pretty much where the fanciness stops, right? I'll spend hundreds of dollars on, you know, the amenities on the front, lighting, et cetera. But in the back, one thing I don't believe in is fancy equipment. You know, I'm not a Snap-on $80,000 lift guy. We've never ran those things and we've always made money. So I'm always wondering why people buy that stuff. Buying 18 scanners, 30 subscriptions to every OEM tool, like, the way we pay our people is, you know, they get ducked off of that stuff. So if I buy them that rack, they're going to have to pay for it. So to me, it's just everybody loses and Snap-on wins. And I think Snap-on doing just fine. So I'm not going to, you know, try to stimulate their economy. So that's so really what it is. Yeah.
How many GSs are you running in a store doing 3 million?
Every store has 6 to 7 in the back and 3 up front. So we're running 9 to 10 man teams out of every store.
But in the back, how many, I guess, are technicians and how many would be a GS in the back?
4 plus 2. So for every 2 techs, there are 1 GS. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And those GSs are typically doing what? Some shops have them cleaning, doing QCs. Some shops have cleaning QCs and oil changes. Some have them cleaning QC, oil changes, and they do repairs. Where are you?
Yeah, the last one.
efficient.
Yeah, cleaning QCs and oil changes. But the QC thing, we actually dedicate at every store one person as a QC manager. So one of those GSs is going to be titled Mr. QC, and he is now in charge of all the QCs. So even though he may not do them all, if a QC comes back, it's his. Now, when we get no comebacks, he gets a raise.
Oh.
We started doing that. It was fun.
Wow. And what do you mean by no comebacks? Like, is it a bonus or is it a permanent raise?
It's a permanent raise, yeah. Wow. So half, you know, we give them a bump in their pay if they do that. You know, no, like if we have a lower than 3% or maybe it's 1%. I think it's 1%. I'm just going to say
it's 1%. Totally tell he's in the sales. It's like, I don't even care. It's a percentage. It's something.
Yes. Yeah.
Don't let the details get in the way of a good story.
That's right.
I love how Zane's just like, but you want to buy your car repair, right, ma'am? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
So with your shops being, as you called it, dumps in the back, do you do any type of presentations in the back? Do you bring customers in the back, or do you really just try to keep them in the front and just stick to a normal process?
Yeah, we're getting in the details. So we keep number one really clean. Bay one is where all the presentations happen.
Okay. Okay, so you have a dedicated.
Yeah.
Show car line.
Dedicated bay.
Show car line.
Yeah, don't look any further. Just look here. Turn around, you know?
And how do you get... People are going to ask. I mean, people are here listening going 5-6 bays, $3 million. There's no way. It's not possible. So speak to that, how you're getting that type of volume, the hours of operation that you run, et cetera, the type of technician you're hiring.
Oh, man. We're gonna ruffle some feathers now. So this is controversial stuff. As Aaron doesn't mind doing. I think that's what we're here for.
So, hey, as long as you're not selling drugs out the back, I want to hear it. And if you are, let us know so we can turn
off. He was Costco, Aaron. He was at Costco.
There's no drugs at Costco.
He was selling Costco snacks.
That's right.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
No, none of that. So where do I start? We do run 6 days a week, which I know this is kind of a no-no for some people, but I do believe that, you know, you can run that. Oh, it's 56 hours of operation. Again, six lifts, let's say, per store, because that one store is five bays, but it has six lifts in there. So I don't know what the throughput of that is. It's basically, if you take your total hours open, multiply by your number of bays, that'll give you how many hours you can run, more or less. If you had a tech in every bay doing 100% efficiency. So if you run the math on that, and then you multiply that by either your effective labor rate, or even better, your gross sales per hour, which is your full rate per hour with parts, what you charge, you'll get what's called the throughput, which is your total capacity for that shop. Most stores run well under 50%. From my experience, they're closer to 30%. My goal was to get to 60. So I said, how am I going to do that? You could open more hours. You could add more lifts, but obviously that's very hard. Sometimes you can't do that. You could add more people. How do I do it? Is personally, I had to get as many cars in with as many hours produced. I realized very quickly, for me at least, and this is my experience, that flat rate wasn't going to do that in my shop. I needed to have two people on a lift, and flat rate, they were not going to do that. I tried it. They did not work for me. So so a lot of these guys are working two people per lift now. You know, we'll have a car come in and we'll still keep one lift open for all the new cars. And if the brake job comes in, we'll have these guys working together on two cars, or three guys even at a car sometimes. As far as the tech,
So you're telling me, I want to recap this. You're paying technicians hourly or salary, and they are working together with another guy to get a car out and get to the next car.
I will explicitly never, ever pay salary to anybody. We pay a very small hourly with a commission off of the store's net profit. It was a modified net profit
plan. For a technician.
For all 33 people in the company.
Wow.
You never knew this, Aaron. Sorry.
I did not know this.
Zane's going to drop a mic and walk out. Like, he's just, he's out.
So I was trying not to say this to Aaron. I'm like, he's going to kick me out of ShopFix. Let I know. A lot of the guys know this already in ShopFix that I do this. But please don't tell Aaron. So now I'm glad I get to tell you this.
Exposing secrets here.
Sorry, Aaron.
So you hire an A-tech and you go, hey, you're going to work with Tim over here. He's an A-tech too, yeah. And you're both going to tackle this car together. And he's like, what?
Yeah.
How do you sell this guy?
So I think we look for a very particular type of individual when bringing them on our team. You know, I do think most techs don't want to work for us, and I'm fine with that. What I look for is somebody who wants to make more money than somebody who wants to learn. So what I'm looking for is guys that are okay with that. So the biggest thing the biggest sell on that is, how much did you make last year? I made $100,000. Okay. How would you like to make $130,000 this year? Like, I would love that. Okay. So here's how we do that. You know, here's how our stuff works. If you do this, here's what we're doing. You get paid off the team. We're a real team. We're not just going to say we're a team, because we're a team because we have the same goal. That's what makes us a team. It's not flat rate is not a team because you're working for yourself. You know, your goal isn't the same as the shop's goal. So he gets that. A lot of techs, they resonate with that. They're like, yeah, that sounds great. But the issue is, you know, we don't like running too many ATECs in one store. One is it's a waste because they all get paid a lot of money. And the second is, you don't really need that. I mean, on this pay plan, you got one really, really knowledgeable guy, and then you have a bunch of guys that are kind of B-techs and C-techs. And also keep in mind, our stores are on high volume, so we're doing a lot of B-tech work. You know, we're not a specialty shop. We're not a Euro shop. We do just brakes and suspension and engine repair. We don't really get into the heavy diag that much.
You're such a good seller, Zane. I got to start. You're such a good seller. He's like, you know, how do you like making $100,000? You want to make 130? Well, yeah, that would sound great. You're natural. Like, you've already sold Aaron on the Costco snacks. You're selling me on working for you.
Good enough. So Zane, somebody comes in and the check engine light's on. Do you just not diagnose it and tell them they got to go to the dealer?
No, I mean, that is, I don't consider that heavy, heavy die. Let's say engine light's on, okay. We scan it, 15 minutes, free check, and then it's a evap code. We'll do an evap test on it.
Okay. But if it's something that looks like it's going to be complicated, you don't even waste time with it. You kick it out.
Yeah. Like a Jaguar comes in and it's like, oh, I've got an electrical problem and it's the third starter that I'm on. I'm going to tell you, ma'am, I'm sorry, but we're not your Jaguar shop. You know, we're not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. My guys are not trained in Jaguars. We don't touch Jaguars, Mercedes.
But say it was a Ford. It's the same issue.
Oh yeah. All day. Yeah. Because we deal with so many Fords that it's just, at this point, it's kind of like statistically, we should be able to figure it out. And then if we get stuck, then we'll say, hey, I spent 3 hours on this thing. I think that's enough. You know, here's no charge. Please go. And I'm going to the next miserable person that might be dealing with this problem.
So you basically said you're not worried about getting the best reputation for fixing the hardest stuff.
No.
You go down the middle of the road. That's what you want to focus on, and just punch in, punch out as much work as you possibly can.
Yeah, I would hate to be the shop that's known for figuring out all the hard stuff. I mean, that's not a reputation I'm interested in having. I want to be like,
man, you just poke the bear for a lot of shop owners because they want that. That's that ego.
No way. I don't even fix cars. Why would I want that? I don't know how to fix a car. So
I love it.
Yeah,
I know. Love it.
I'm not interested.
So you get these guys to work as a team. They get a ticket. Ticket says check engine light. One of them, I guess, diagnoses it. The other one might start doing the oil change while the other one's doing the diagnosing.
Yeah, so we run the board system. The board system is ran by the lead tech and the manager. And for these of you guys who don't know what the board system is, it's a production board on a magnet. It's a big whiteboard, magnetic. It has all the cars. In the morning, the lead tech and the whole team with the manager stands there and says, all right, here's all the cars I got to go. The lead tech decides who works on what, along with the manager. Because the manager knows when they got to get done. The lead tech is knowing what skill level everyone's at, because he's the one who's really rescuing everyone when they get stuck. They do get stuck, which is another thing. It's okay to get stuck. That's how you learn. And so we encourage that. Yep. We encourage pushing guys out of that. So anyway, a car comes in. We don't, our lead techs and B techs don't pull in cars. They don't set lifts. They don't scan cars. They don't change oil. They don't do anything someone below them in skill level can do. Because we want my lead tech only doing what he can do or she can do. We only want my B tech doing the hardest thing they can possibly do. Everybody does the hardest possible thing in theory. They sometimes complain and get burnt out.
Love that. There's a lot there.
So that's how you get that efficiency without paying out. I think it's silly. It's my opinion that you have an A-tech doing a brake job when that C-tech could do that, because the A-tech should be working on the A-tech stuff, the B, and so on and so forth. So yeah, we have these GSs. All they do is pull in cars, set lifts, scan the car, give it to the A-tech.
sometimes the A-tech will even tell them, hey, go on Identifix and run that test and let me know if you get stuck. All right, get out of here. So they're going around the shop, bouncing all over. And then when a car gets done and it's 5 o'clock and a brake job comes in, we'll have 4 people jump on that as a team. And we'll get that work done. I mean, we've done brake jobs in 13 minutes, 12 minutes. This is a norm in our shop. And that's the only way that I found out to get, when we, this shop in Troy did 400K back-to-back months out of 5 lifts or 6 lifts now, but 5 bays, you know, and you can do that constantly. And you got guys, there's, I think 7 out of 8, 9 guys on that team are making 100K. And it's, and literally these young kids, they have never made over 50 now because they're getting paid off the net profit. So let's see how it goes.
So walk me through that. How do you do that? Is it a percentage?
They get a percentage of gross sales minus their overhead. The overhead is...
Let's just say I'm 22. Pretend I don't know any of this stuff. I'm 22 years old. I'm a B-tech. I can do 40 hours a week in a traditional flat rate shop. I can do basic check engine light. Other than that, I'm not going to be great. How would you teach me how I'm going to get paid?
Yeah. I mean, anyone, whether you're a B-tech or an A-tech, I would say, hey, so how we pay people is a base pay for hourly if you show up. So we work 6 days a week. If you show up 6 days a week, you get $1,000 guarantee. As long as you're here, it's really hourly plus overtime. But I'll say it's $1,000 guarantee. As long as you show up those 6 days, you're getting paid those 6 days. Now, the rest of your pay will come from the team. And how that works is if we do, so this store, let's say hypothetically does 50K a week and our overhead is 25. That 25 includes everybody's base pay and our fixed expenses. And it has an allocation for 25% parts. And I'll get back to the parts thing in a second. But this store normally does 50K. So therefore, when we hit 50K, I'm going to give you 5% of every dollar over that 25K. I'm sharing my net profit with you. So anyway, simple math. We do 50K normally. Overhead is 25. What's the difference? 25, you get 5% of that, which is $1,250. So your paycheck right out of the gate, as long as the store stays at 50K a week, you make $2,250 every single week and you get paid that every Friday. Now, the only caveat is parts costs must be kept at 25%. If the parts cost is at, let's say, 30% and you do 50K, well, you owe me 5% because you wasted money on parts. So now you'll get paid off. And this is exactly not how the math works, but you just subtract 5% of the 50K, which $2,500. So you just take that off and then you get billable back. You get commissioned off the $4,750, which in this case would be $4,750 minus $25,000, which is our overhead. And then the difference is $22,500 times 5%. I know if I lost you guys, I'm sorry, but
no,
anybody figure out?
Basically,
Zane's a mathematician. Sorry, we're gonna post.
It's easier on a whiteboard. I can do a whiteboard.
Yeah, but I mean, it's real simple. Basically, if parts go, your overhead goes from $25,000 plus the parts of 25% and. If the overhead was, what would that be, 12.5, or parts would be 12.5. So parts would just go up, we'll call it 14.5. That just means there's less net for everybody to get a piece of. So, Zane, I'll ask you a difficult question. Is the success a result of you doing this team and different pay model, or is it just a result of everybody being there 6 days a week and not running overhead?
So that is a difficult question. And I would say that it's both, because with more capacity, you can make more revenue. But I would also say that even if we ran 5 days a week with flat rate, we would still make more dollars with this pay plan. And the reason for that is it's a very simple one, is you're incentivizing people off of dollars, not hours. And when you incentivize people off of dollars, somehow there's more dollars. So I think it's both, but I do think that the pay, I would say it's 60% that play pay plan, if not 70, and then the 30% would be the...
I guess where I'm going is, could you be flat rate in 6 days a week and make the same money? Or could you be your system you're describing and be 5 days a week and make the same money? I'm curious, and it sounds like you believe the pay plan is more of it than just being open an extra day every week, which is an extra 4 or 5 days a month, depending on how many weeks we got in a month. But you effectively have an extra week compared to the average shop owner every month.
I can give you a technical reason for why I think it's the pay plan. And that is in direct correlation to gross sales per hour. So one of the things that this pay plan does is it encourages the team to sell, to increase GSPH. And how precisely they do that is by selling more parts. So if you look at most flat rate shops, they'll run a 50-50 split. And generally, I can look at a tech metric.
Or worse.
Or worse. And I can look at a daily report or a yearly report. I can tell you whether a store is a flat rate because they generally have very high hours and a lower GSPH in part sales. And the reason is because who's doing the inspections, the tech, what they look for, hours. They don't care about selling more parts. Why? Because they're not getting paid off of that. So what happens is, we lose money on revenue and you end up doing a lot more hours, which is where, and it's funny because if you go macro, most owners complain about not having enough lifts and not having enough techs. And the reason is, I'm like, dude, if you just increase your GSPH by $50, you won't need more techs and you won't need more lifts. So a technical reason, and they need more time to do more hours because they say, well, let's increase hours. Like, no, like stop thinking like a technician. Let's think like an owner. How can we get more dollars for these hours? So that's really where this pay plan for me makes more sense, is because when you're incentivizing the team on hours and parts, somehow you end up getting both. And so again, I'm very adamant that from a technical reason, I've seen GSPHs climb well above 300. And we do run a 320 to a 330 to a 350 GSPH in our stores, whereas the industry standard is around 250. So we're selling almost $100 more per part. So I think it has honestly not that much to do with the extra day. I do believe that even if we ran this pay plan on a 5-day, we would generally produce more than a flat rate shop, to seeing nothing of the team working together. I think that's just a cherry on the top. The biggest thing is people start focusing on the metrics that really make money.
Yeah, I think what would really, and I'm pushing on these because this is what everybody's saying. They're listening in the car and they're yelling at the radio going, how? So I'm asking these questions. I think that where the rubber meets the road and where someone could do the math on this is they could take your store and just say, how many hours are we doing total? Just how many hours are we doing? Divide it by how many hours they're doing per day. And so for you, you might be doing the exact same hours per day that somebody else is on flat rate. Or not even that, or on salary. There's a lot of shops that are salary or hourly. In fact, I would say there are more shops that are probably hourly with overtime without even a bonus. That's probably the largest group in America. So I would say that if we just took the hours per day, if someone said, well, crud, I'm turning as many hours as Zane is per day, but I don't have my people incentivized to mention to the customer, hey, we're in here doing your timing belt. Do you want us to also do your water pump? Hey, we've taken the serpentine belt off. Do you want us to go ahead and do the idler pulley while we're here? Hey, we're replacing one motor mount. Would you like us to do the rest? We're doing one coil and spark plug. Would you like us to do the rest of the coils and the spark plug? I mean, there's a million things here, but it comes down to a culture of asking the customer, I'm in here now. It is cheaper to do this while we're here. Would you like us to go ahead and do this? Which drives average repair orders and drives a long-term customer satisfaction because their car isn't broken on the side of the interstate, if we're being honest. Because we all hate that call. You were just there. You just did XYZ, and now it's broken. Like, we don't want that call. But what I'm thinking here is so interesting is some owners may be going, how is this possible? And I think there's a couple things that are standing out to me. One, the 6 days is a big deal. You have an extra week. I mean, that's a huge deal. And I'm also curious, if you have everybody working all 6 days or if they're all 5 days and you have them rotating, I'm sure someone's asking that. And then I'm also thinking the way you're paying people, I don't even think it's the team as much as the way you're paying people to be paid off the dollars. Because there's a lot of shops, let's be real, that are flat rate and everybody it gets along and they're great. There's a lot of shops that are absolutely cutthroat and everybody hates each other and they don't get along. And so I've seen both. And I've seen production out of both models where everybody hates each other and everybody is actually getting along. But I think the bonus on the dollars and the extra day are two key things in your ingredients. So to answer all the listeners that may be wondering, if I'm an average tech, are you going to push me to do 6 days a week? Or is it frowned upon if I do five? And am I allowed to do five? Or is it always six?
No, they're certainly allowed to do 5, 4, 3, 2, whatever they want. I mean, that's one thing we're very flexible with. We're not. The actual funny thing about this plan is you get paid off of how many, the commission is also based off of how many hours you worked. So you don't just get paid commission for all 6 days if you're there only one. So we encourage
One of the things we do is, like I was saying, the philosophy of the people we hire are the ones that are interested in growth and the work. They're in the season of life where they're willing to put those hours in. Young guys, most of my team's under 30 with no families. So that's a huge proponent. And you know, that's something you attract. I'm like that. Maybe in the next season of life, I might change my opinion on those things. But I don't frown upon anyone who says, I want to spend my time with my family. Of course, I don't want to lose a winner because I'm not willing to negotiate. But I think, you know, if we were to look at the math, having that extra week, it wouldn't push the revenue up that much. I think a lot of people use that as a crutch to say, well, he's got an extra day. Well, run the math. You know, the truth is at the numbers. If you have a store with an extra week open, you're really getting 1/52nd an increase, technically speaking. So if we're doing another 40%.
Well, it's an extra week a month.
A week a month. Well, yeah, 4 days.
A week a month.
So we have 12 weeks extra. Sure. Okay.
Yes. It's the actually
truth
quite
is in the numbers.
It is actually 3 more months that you're open than the average shop owner. In some months, yeah. It's, you know, a full 5 days because it's a 5 week month.
So that would be 3 months more open a year is what you're saying. It's just 52 extra days.
I'm just pointing out that it is substantial. It's substantial.
Yeah. So again, we would just look at the two stores and see if the increase in hours open is proportional. It's, you know, and if you look at if it's disproportional, then that means the extra revenue is coming from some other place, right? It's coming from a different system or a different pay plan, whatever. And I would say it is disproportional. And we don't have the time to run the math, but I would say even with the extra 3 months open, I still think because of the way we're doing things.
Paying on the dollars.
On the dollar. I do believe that it's probably an increase of almost 70 to 100%, you know, per what is normal for a 5-bay shop. So whatever that is, I think it's like 1.4 million or something now, I'm sure. It might be less.
You know, people right now, their head is hurting. You're making them question everything about their business right now.
Sorry. Yes. I told you it'd hilarious. Be controversial. You asked me.
I love it.
Your kid of words.
Well, it's funny you're talking about the numbers, Zane, and running through it. I think there's some other benefits that you've tapped into doing it the style that you're doing to and putting the incentivization into their choice to be coin operated to a degree. But it's worked out for you in the benefit of the type of the people you have, your teams and the culture and the people that are moving forward and the drive they have. Because it's in their hands to move it forward, they're going to see the output of it, and they're incentivized to move it forward. So there's some beyond the numbers. There's some things you are tapping into that have worked really well for you.
Well, I want to point out this specific thing is with this plan, there's significantly less management required. Because the team pushes themselves and there's a lot of sideways pressure because they're all in the same exact pay plan. So I've never fired anybody in the last 5 years. The team gets rid of them. But I get to be the good guy and, you know, then I kind of get this guy. But, you know, and again, we're an experiment. I don't have answers. I mean, this is an experiment. We might switch to flat rate on store 4, 5, or 6. You know, I don't know if this is going to work. That's why I'm very reluctant to talk about it. Because when people say, well, I want to do this, I'm like, please don't, because I don't know if this is going to work. You know, it's worked so far, but...
Well, it's like you said, it's a little bit of all the different things that's making it probably work. It's probably not one giant thing, but I will say the end result, the giant thing that is giving you your success is the teamwork. I would 100% agree. The teamwork is what you have pulled off. The question is all of those things contributing to teamwork, or is it just a handful? Only you're going to be able to tell us that. So I'm excited to watch as you, quote, experiment and do different things. This has been awesome.
Yeah. Zane.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much for being on, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate this. Fun. Sorry about going controversial on you guys.
I love it.
We're all going to make a Costco run after this. That's my last time talking about Costco.
Please don't. PTSD at Costco.
That's right.